So has five qualities that include flow, spaciousness, love, light, and stillness. And regardless of what's happening in the outer world, this meadow of peace, it's the eye of the storm, is ever present within us. And if our life is not one of experiencing that flow state, energized, engaged, if there's not a lot of spacious stillness in our world, if our inner state is not typically one of experiencing unconditional love and the light of inspiration and understanding, then something's getting in the way. It turns out that something is what the author refers to as the storyteller. The narrator that lives in our heads is always supplying commentary about our current experience. If you remember the book, The Untethered Soul, by Michael Singer, he refers to the commentator as the insane roommate that shares real estate with us in our minds. Whatever you call it, the bottom line is that the storyteller likes to make up stories and spins tales about whatever is happening. And the ongoing mental dialogue that ensues covers up the awareness of the true reality with a capital R, the meadow. It drowns it out because we typically listen to the storyteller without realizing that we're doing so. And our work is to become compassionately curious about that. Compassionately curious about the stories that we are believing to be true about our lives without getting lost in them. And when we can see what our storyteller is doing, rather than, you know, being drawn into the stories, then we're no longer at the mercy of that push-pull spinning going on in our minds, you know, the aversion-attachment kind of back and forth. And in order to shift our perception to one of observing rather than being lost in the story, it's helpful to understand what typically fuels the struggles of the storyteller. And the answer, in a word, is fear. As you heard, my talk title is Fear. It's nothing to be afraid of. Fear is very often behind the storyteller's interpretations and can further obstruct our experience of the meadow. And so we want to take some time to unpack that a little bit this morning. So fear, we've heard it described as false evidence appearing real. That's one of the acronyms for it, which I find to be very accurate when it comes to the storyteller's anxiety-laced dialogue. And this internal constant fear-mongering that's going on, well, that can cause us to want to just forget everything and run. There's another acronym for fear, especially when we're filled with the feelings and the sensations of fear. You know, that unsettled stirring in the pit of the stomach, heart begins to race, that oh no moment, you know, mouth going dry. Fear causes us to contract rather than expand. It causes us to resist rather than to respond and welcome whatever's happening. And when we are having behaviors like that, it's indicators that we're caught in fear. We can be gripped by fear. We can lie awake at night being emotionally hijacked. We can also get caught in a constant low-grade fear that the author describes as the slow drip of insecurity. And that can flare up into anxiety, into uncertainty, even full-blown panic attacks. Now, certainly fear has its place. You know, as we've heard before, the fight or flight system within us is part of our makeup that is designed to help keep us safe in the physical world. Don't step out onto the road into moving traffic. Don't take selfies on the edge of the Grand Canyon. Stay away from mama bear and babies. And we want to listen to those messages. Fear can be a very wise warning signal for us in situations that are appropriate, but Mary O'Malley writes that it is estimated that that kind of fear is only about 1% of the fear we experience. 1%. And the problem is that the warning system in the brain flips the switch not only when these kinds of situations arise, but also when things happen like we discover an email in our inbox from our boss. And the subject line reads, "Please come to my office immediately." Or when our spouse says, "I need to talk to you about something." That's when psychological fear shows up. See, these are only words that we've either read or heard, and yet they can cause a cascade of reactivity that engages the storyteller's talents. Suddenly, the mind begins with incessant simulations of possible scenarios. You know, my boss wants to fire me, my spouse wants a divorce. The spinning begins, and many of the psychological fears that we conjure up are illusions that exist only in our heads. And yet, we can allow them to control our lives. Because it can be just as true that your boss wants to give you a promotion, or that your spouse has had a bad day and just needs to share what's going on with them and get support from you. The point is that our minds tend to immediately go to threat when faced with a situation that could potentially be embarrassing or painful or hurtful, and psychological fear can take over. Now, psychological fear originates in our childhood, before we had the cognitive ability to understand adults' behaviors in a way that we didn't personalize their struggles. And we took on fearful beliefs about ourselves, about people around us, about the world in general. And these fears of our childhood, they don't go away on their own. If they're not integrated, if they're not healed, they just get buried inside, and then they influence us from beneath our everyday awareness. Because from that, we take on defensive coping strategies that are largely unconscious. Slowly, over those early years, we learn to leave behind our true selves for a mind-created persona. Eckhart Tolle calls this the mind-made me. Think about your mind-made me. It's a self-created image that tries so hard to be in control, but has great insecurity about it. Mary O'Malley goes further and calls it the child-made me. The storyteller we're functioning from was created when we were very young. And this gradual forgetting of who we really are happens as part of the human condition. You know, it's not about blaming our parents, blaming our teachers or the classroom bully. It's about learning how to deal with fear in a positive, healthy way as we begin to have compassion for ourselves and for others who are caught in their own clouds of struggle. Because if we don't, we can actually become afraid of fear itself. We can try to run from the shame, the anger, the despair that it generates by creating systems to help keep us from seeing it. You know, things like compulsions, addictive behaviors, busyness, distracting ourselves, endlessly trying to fix life. We might turn to food and drugs, alcohol, endless to-do lists, or engage in driven behavior, excessively exercising, binge-watching television, spending hours online, retail therapy. You know, we can let fear of being wrong or being ridiculed keep us silent. We can even use spiritual practice as a bypass. So think about how you deal with psychological fear. Where are you letting unfounded fear rule your life? Because we pay a heavy price for crawling into these clouds of fear, as the author describes it, and then spending our lives trying to escape, trying to run. But trying to get rid of fear only creates more of it. And so Mary O'Malley asked the question, do you want to keep running away from fear your whole life? Because we can't outrun our fears. They'll just show up in some way. Now, there's good news in the midst of all this. Since this fear-based, child-made persona is self-created, what does that tell us? We can do, yes, there's something we can do about it. There's another way for us to experience life from the meadow. And psychological fear needs a past or a future in order to exist. Either memories of the past or worries about the future. When we can pause, become present, move to a place of peace, and let the moment be what it is, then it becomes possible to be in the midst of a challenging situation and not let fear take me down. It gives me space to face everything and rise. There's another acronym for fear. And to do that, we need to change our inner state, help the storyteller to calm down. It takes compassion for that. And then we can begin to see psychological fear for what it is. It's made up. It's illusionary. It's false evidence appearing real. And to change our perspective, this is where compassion comes in. Self-compassion. We need to hold that child-made self in our hearts. We have to find a place of unconditional love and acceptance for our younger self that took on these fearful, limiting beliefs. That's our work. The author asks us to think about a time in our insecure adolescent years, when the storyteller was very forthcoming about all of our shortcomings. Can you find such a time in your life? A time when you may have had something challenging or embarrassing happen, and that storyteller was critiquing the moment in a hurtful way. I have a plethora of memories to choose from. Well, as you see that younger self in your mind, consider the question she asks in the book. Can you allow this awkward, easily confused, and quickly embarrassed adolescent into your heart? Can you feel that? Take a breath, because this is our work. This is truly our work. We can eradicate fear by joining mentally and emotionally with the presence that indwells us. Do you see it? We can align with the divine love within. And it creates a sort of a kindfulness, love that word, that heals, makes it safe for us to look at our fears. We do not have to live our life with fear in charge. Integrating our past is the way out, and that is by getting to know your fear, learning to not be afraid of looking at our fears, and shifting our perspective to see how they do not have power over us, and changing our inner state as we face the fear. You know, in the years of training I had in the martial arts, I had endless opportunities to learn to overcome fear. Many examples spring to mind, but one in particular stands out. When you're learning self-defense techniques, there is a foundational skill that needs to be mastered called a break fall. And what that means is that you have to learn the proper way to land when you're being thrown or find yourself falling for whatever reason. And if you don't learn how to break your fall properly, you will not get over the fear of being tossed in the air. I speak from experience on this. I was one of those people who was terrified of being thrown around. And we had mats, of course, but no matter how hard I tried, I could not master break falls, and I had picked up a very, very bad habit that whenever someone was trying to throw me, I would grab the back of their gi, their uniform, on the way down. Bad news. Any martial artists here who could say, yeah, wrong thing to do, yep. It was definitely a habit I wanted to break because now both of us were off balance, very unsafe. But fear just kept me from being able to do it properly. My sensei and all my instructors kept trying to help. They tried everything they could to teach me how to do it properly, but to no avail. And in fact, it was becoming almost a phobia with me. When I walked into the dojo, if I saw we were doing self-defense, I would tighten up. Fear would just go through me. I'd be thinking, why did I come to class today? I just wanted to turn around and run out the door. So I found myself one day in the room with 50 of my classmates, about 50, and we were paired up, and we were throwing each other around. And it was when it was my turn to be thrown, I tried so hard to not grab onto that gi, but it had become an automatic reaction that I couldn't control, so I grabbed it on the way down. So my sensei was watching. He stopped the whole class. And he said, the next time Jane grabs her partner's uniform when she's being thrown, everyone in this room is getting 50 push-ups. So you could hear a pin drop as my partner. And I saw the look on his face. He just was so sorry that he had to do it, but he said, you know. And as he threw me, wonder of wonders, I managed to do a break fall and I didn't grab onto him. The room erupted in cheers, of course. I didn't have to do any push-ups. But now it became a class project to help me overcome my fear. Every single time I went to a class before it started, I would have several classmates come up and say, come on, let's practice your falls. And they would throw me over and over and over again. One time, 25 times in a row. And so little by little, I became an expert on break falls. I got it down after endless practices, and my fear evaporated. But there's a little twist to this story. At my Unity Center, a few months earlier, I had written a year-end letter to the universe. You know, you can kind of do it at the end of the year. And then the church would hold on to it, and they would mail them out at a certain time of the year, and you'd get your envelope and say, oh, I wonder what I wrote. Well, that happened around this time. And I remember opening the letter, and the first words in the letter were, I am free of the fear of being thrown in karate. Now, I have to tell you, I was totally shocked when I read that. I had no memory of ever writing those words. And I got the amazingness of divine wisdom. The perfect way for me to get beyond fear was not to threaten me with consequences. My sensei was already giving me push-ups every time I did it. No, make others take consequences, and it will instantly motivate me to change, like that. Give the entire gym push-ups because of my behavior, and compassion will supersede the fear. My behavior automatically changes. And here's why. Oops, I forgot we had some push-ups happening there. Here's why. Because fear is always happening within a greater space where we're not afraid. Do you see it? Let me say that again. Fear is always happening within a greater space in you that is not afraid. And that greater space is powerful. But the more we get caught in fear, the more we lose sight of that space. We give away our power to whatever it is we're believing is fearful. And our job is to widen our awareness of that greater space, the heart, and to let the love within us envelop the fearful child within. As the author says, I assure you, looking at fear is one of the safest things you will ever do once you learn how to see fear rather than believing your fear-based stories. That's called metacognition, being aware of one's mental processes and not getting caught in them. Becoming compassionately curious and seeing it from a wider, loving perspective of the heart. Gerald Jampolsky in the book Teach Only Love said there are only two emotions, love, our natural inheritance, and fear, an invention of our minds, which is illusionary. And when we align ourselves with the power of love, fear can be transmuted. That is what compassion can bring forth for ourselves and for each other. So there are two ways to live our lives, in separation, fear, in the disconnect, or connected, loving, and kind. One way is heart-centered, being the way of God. The other is being stuck in the head, in the way of God. And if your perspective is created by your head, it will be based on data, thoughts. If your perspective is created by your heart, it'll be based on loving awareness. And if your perspective is created by head and heart, working co-jointly, that will create wisdom. But the heart has to lead. Kindfulness, self-compassion can get us to a safe place where that can happen. Now, I'm not just making this stuff up, you know. I'm not just pulling it out of the air. Let me share with you some research that Dr. Kristen Neff writes about. She says that the power of self-compassion is not just an idea. It's very real. It actually manifests in our bodies. When we give ourselves compassion, we are tapping into the mammalian brain's caregiving system, and that triggers the release of oxytocin. And research tells us that increased levels of oxytocin bring forth feelings of trust, calm, safety, generosity, connectedness. The psychologist Kelly McGonigal calls Self-compassion, the chemical, or oxytocin, the chemical of courage. So courage isn't the absence of fear, it's the dealing with it. Do you see that self-compassion creates safety to do this courageous work? In fact, New Thought founder Ernest Holm proclaims that love is the only security there is in the universe. And the more you look and listen with compassion, the more your heart opens to how scared your storyteller is. But the Course in Miracles tells us, if you knew who walked beside you on the path you have chosen, fear would be impossible. You are the loving presence that your fears have been waiting for. It's your heart that will heal them. It's your self-compassion that will bless the child-made self and will take the reactivity out of the yarns that your storyteller has been generating. And as you allow fear a healing space to be in the acceptance of the heart, it can pass through you, opening you again to the meadow of well-being. And as more and more of us come into alignment with the beauty of the peaceful meadow within us, we create an energetic field of peace. It's like an emotional contagion. It spreads throughout our world, in our families, our workplaces, our communities, and beyond. Learning to love ourselves back to wholeness is the work, and making it safe for our child-made me to come out and play is the key. But don't take my word for it. Don't believe a word I say. Try it for yourself. And so in your discussion groups this week or on your own, here are some questions to consider. What systems have you used to deal with psychological fear? Think of addictive, driven behavior, busyness, retail therapy. What is it for you? Get to know your unconscious coping strategies. And get to know your fear. What does that mean to you to get to know your fear, and how do you do that? Rainer Maria Rilke writes, perhaps everything that frightens us is in its deepest essence something helpless that wants our love. How does that show up in your life? How might compassion enter into the healing of your fear? How can you widen the container for that fear? Those of you who are in groups will get these questions when you meet. The Sufi poet Hafiz said, fear is the cheapest room in the house. I'd like to see you living in better conditions. Are you up for moving to better living conditions?
Yes.
Say it like you mean it.
Yes.
If you do, you will help the storyteller to remember that everything is all right. And so it is.